Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by Local Enterprise Office Donegal. Find out more about the Energy Efficiency Grant, aimed at helping businesses to operate in a more sustainable way, by visiting localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Business Matters on Highland Radio with me, Chris Ashmore. Coming up, I'll be looking at a report from farming, food and agribusiness specialist professional services firm IFAC that finds that expanding internationally is high on the priority list for many Irish agri-food small and medium enterprises. I'll be speaking with David Layden, head of food and agribusiness with IFAC, about its report, which is called Getting Your Business Fit for Export. And I'll also be finding out more about the country's first digital readiness monitor, which analyses Ireland's progress on digital development. One of its key findings is that 36% of websites in Ireland have a low or very low level of sophistication, despite various government grants and programs to support digital advancement. David Curtin, the CEO of the National Domain Register.ie, will be telling me more. But first this evening, a very interesting story about how a Syrian man, Abdul Ahmad, who had to flee his war-torn country, is now living in Carndonagh, where he has established his own business based on bees. Indeed, beekeeping runs deep in his family, with his father and grandfather both teaching him an awful lot about how to keep bees. Well, 8 years ago, he left his native village to try and make a new life, departing on a motorbike with his pregnant wife and eventually finding refuge in a camp in Greece for 9 months, where their first child was born. In 2016, they arrived in Ireland as asylum seekers, spending 9 months in Roscommon, learning English, before settling in Carndonagh, which is now their home. Not long after they arrived in Inishowen, he set up his first beehive in their garden, which he made at the Carn Men's Shed. And so the business started to grow, with local farmer Wilson Moore offering him space on his farm for more beehives, and Inishowen Development Partnership also being very supportive. His business is now really growing, and he produces honey, candles, and a host of other bee products. Well, earlier in the week, I spoke to Abdul about how he came to be in Donegal.
We left Syria, you know, myself and my wife, 2016, and we spent like 2 years in Greece. And at 2018, you know, at you know, the resettlement program, you know, we get pleased to be here in Ireland, as, you know, they chose us to come here to Ireland.
And did you know much about Ireland at all?
To be honest, not at all, no. Even when I finished that call, you know, from the Irish embassy, they said, you know, Abdul, you will be in Ireland. When I finished that call, I said to my wife, where is Ireland in the map? Just look at, you know. And, yeah, we have to do some research about Ireland, about the weather, about the history, about, you know, just, you know, to get some ideas and the language. And, you know, we were pleased to be here, like, you know.
So when you came into Ireland first, did you know that you'd be going to Donegal, or were you told what was likely to happen?
No, we were in the county of Roscommon first for like 10 months in a hotel, you know, and after that, you know, the Department of Justice had an interview with us, and they told us, you know, we'll move you to Donegal. And I said, that's great, you know, because, you know, I know some people has waiting there for more than a year and a half for waiting for the house. And I spoke to a lady who works in a reception, said, you know, I told her I have an interview with the department. And they said, you will be up in Donegal. And she said, Abdul, don't go there. It's up in nowhere. And even their accent is very bad. I said, my goodness.
So you came to Carndonagh, and now from an early stage, just to let people know, your own family actually back in Syria, your father had kept bees for many years. So this was an idea that you had in your head maybe to start something here.
Yes, yes. Like my dad, he's a teacher, and I am a teacher too. But, you know, we are farmers as well. We have a piece of land. And my granddad has hives, and he gives them to my dad, and my dad gives it to me. You know, it's like a traditional family thing. And I was, you know, working with bees since I was 15 years. And I know, you know, my granddad teaches me all the thing about bees. You know, even I was watching him working with bees without any, you know, protective suits or any gears or anything. And he said, you know, always he told me, just you have to feel, you know, you have to feel the bees before they feel your feelings. So it's all about feelings. If you feel like stressed, the bees will know your feelings and they will attack you more. So you just have to be, you know, yourself. You have to believe in yourself. I can work with bees. I can manage that. So it's just, you don't have to be afraid of working with bees, and you will be fine.
So how did you actually set up the beehives in Carndonagh? Obviously, you needed to get a little bit of land as well. So how did that all come about?
So yes, when we came here to Carndonagh, and you know, that's 2019, I did the course for engineering course first, and I worked for a company here in Carndonagh for 2 years. Then I said to myself, you know, this is not my life. And I, you know, when I came here, I, you know, spoke with a few local people, you know, and a lady, she asked me what my hobby is or what, you know. And I told her, you know, I'm bees, you know, it will be great if I have some bees here. Do you have bees in this country? She said, yes. I said, my goodness, you know, like miserable weather, like really raining summer and winter, like, you know. And she said, no, my husband has 4 hives, and you're welcome to take a look at them. So I went to her house and took a look at the bees, and, you know, great bees, very nice color bees, like black bees, and working even in the rain. Then I said, you know, I told her, I want some bees to keep bees. So, and I joined the club, you know, the Inishowen Beekeepers Association. I worked like 2 years volunteers for the club. Then I told them, you know, I need to, you know, to get my own beehives. And a friend of mine, he said, Abdul, get you a beehive and I'll give you some bees. Then I start to make, you know, I joined to the mansion in Karen, and I bought some wood, and I start to make my own hives. You know, I start keeping bees, first of all, in my back, you know, the back garden of my house. Then when I, you know, the number gets like 5 hives and I want more, I said I can't have more than 5 hives in the back, you know, back garden, because if my kids want to play in a garden. Then I start to ask, you know, the local people about, you know, if somebody give me a piece of land to put some more hives. So, and I, you know, met Wilson Moore here, he's the owner of Riversdale Country House. And he said he has, like, you know, good amount of acres. He said, Abdul, if you fill this land of bees, I don't mind. So I have now about 20 hives in his land. And I have, you know, another 30 hives in somewhere else. So, like, in total now, 50 hives. And, you know, great people here, great local, like, help. And I have more offers, you know, from people. Abdul, if you're looking for more space, you're welcome to put a few hives in my land, in my, you know, property. So that's how I start.
And it's now become a fully fledged business, and it's called Donagh Bees, as in Carndonagh, D-O-N-A-G-H, Donagh Bees. And you have a website. So where are you selling your products to?
Well, yes, you know, I thought, you know, when I chose that name, I thought to give something back to this, you know, small town, like my village. And, you know, Donagh is the river in Carndonagh. And I said, this will be my, you know, my business name, Donagh Bees. And, you know, all my products sales through my online business first, and you know, I have supplied, you know, mostly some all the shops around Carondona, and even like close to Letterkenny as well. You know, I have some, you know, in Wirral, Ireland, and Letterkenny a few shops as well. So it's, you know, there I'm selling my products, but usually just, you know, mostly of my product sales through my website. So just get orders posted, next day delivery. So that's, you know, the great job.
And tell us just exactly about the range of products. Now, obviously, honey is I suppose, the main one, but there are others as well.
Yes. When I start to make my own hives, and, you know, some of the beekeepers in our club say, Abdul, your beehive is really great. If we will be happy if you make some more and we can buy it from you. Then I start, my goodness, that would be a great idea to supply people with, you know, what they need to keep bees. So I start to make some beehives for sale, and I start to rear some bees for sale as well, you know, and, you know, get me interested, to get some beekeeping equipment as well, you know, for just for us here in Inishowen. And so any beekeeper can come to my house, you know, I have small shade, you know, and they can buy whatever they want to start keeping bees. So this idea.
So it has evolved into a full-time business?
It's exactly now, yes. Like since 2 years, I'm relying on this business. So, you know, it's a great. You know, the bees never let me down, you know, even with the terrible weather outside now, you know, but, you know, we'll get over it.
Yeah. And also the beeswax, you can use that in many things, including candles.
Exactly, yes. You know, if you, like me now, I'm relying, you know, 100% in my business. So I just thought to myself, you know, the honey won't be the only product bees can produce. So we have like, because when I harvest my honey, I end up with lots of beeswax. So I said, okay, I just need to add more, you know, I just want to add value to my product. So I start, okay, what I can do with this beeswax. So I thought I start to making candles, beeswax candles. And when I start to make candles and the people buy it, I thought, my goodness, that's great. And I start to harvest, you know, the pollen even from the bees, the propolis to make liquid out of it, to make creams, to, you know, from the beeswax, to make, you know, all type of balms, you know, lip balms, foot balms, hand creams, skin creams. It's all just to be, you know, to be honest, just to add the value to my products and to, you know, to be, you know, to get to generate an income for myself and for my family. Mm.
And coming from Syria and obviously the different challenges in a new country, what, did you find it hard to establish a business here? And was there much support out there and advice and help if you needed it to try and find out how to get around things?
Yes. I get lots of help, you know, especially from, you know, the IDB in Bonprana, IDB office. And, you know, when I established my work and, you know, they give me good, great support. Like they give me even like a few courses, like to, you know, bookkeepings, you know, a few type of courses as well. So I get really great support from the, you know, this office in Bonclana.
Yeah. The bees themselves, they're a fascinating insect, and maybe some people just don't realize just what an important role they play in our whole ecosystem.
Well, as I said, you know, as even I'm writing in my bee suit, even in my shirt, you know, it's no bees, no life. So like we're relying on the bees for our, you know, pollination, our, like, over 70% of our food crops, you know, relying on the bees for pollinating. So we need to look after the bees, especially, you know, the Irish bees. You know, we know all countries have their own bees, but we hear, like, in Ireland, I have seen some different type of bees, and some people just bringing bees from different countries. And, you know, even all my videos and all my social media channels, you know, I say to people, you know, all the beekeepers, please just look after the Irish bees because it's amazing creatures and we need just to look after them.
And you would be a great believer in certainly where possible that people grow as much locally and consume as much locally, and it'll cut down, I suppose, on carbon footprints and having to transport things over huge distances.
That's exactly right. Yes, that, you know, it's just encouraging people like to grow your food, to even to encouraging people to have like one beehive if they have like a small space in their land to for just one beehive for the house use. That would be great. And you can, anybody can, you know, manage to, you know, to keep one hive in their garden. And that will keep, you know, the population of the bees just in a great level.
Now, your website provides lots of information and one can order products from it. You've got a lot of attention from what you've done already. And indeed, you recently had a crew down from RTE Television to do a little bit of filming about your story, which will be for the Ear to the Ground program. And hopefully we'll see that on the television screens later this year.
That's exactly, yes. They came to me and, you know, just they want to know my story, you know, how, you know, the journey of me who came to from Syria and established my work here and, you know, all different things, and to show them my bees. And, you know, I, even with my bees, I have 4 tunnels growing some veg as well, you know, just to support me, you know, when if I get like bad year. So I have, you know, just generate income from the bees and the fish. So just to, you know, it's a good life. So, yes, I'm really encouraging the people to, you know, to grow their own food. And if they can, to keep just maybe a one beehive, that would be great.
And if people want to find out more, you have a website, donnabees.com?
.com, yes. DonnaBees.com.
And your children, they're growing up in Carndonagh. Are they old enough yet to be helping you out, or is it still a little bit too maybe dangerous for them to be helping with the bees?
No, well, you know, my boy, he's really interesting in bees. He wants to work with me. He's like 8.5 years, you know, he's in second class this year. But no, he's very interesting in bees, and, you know, it will be his legacy to get it from me as well, you know, because it has to be in my, I have to give it to him, and he had to give it to his, you know, children, so it will be legacy in our blood, you know. So I bought a bee suit for him, and he's, I get his, you know, sometimes he said, Dad, take me with you, I want to work with to help you, so he'll be good help when he grow up a little bit.
And finally, just looking ahead the next 12 months, next couple of years, what would your particular plans or your main aims or ambitions be?
Well, I hope in the coming years, you know, now I have 50 hives, so hopefully in the coming few years it will be like more than 150 hives.
And that was Abdul Ahmed of Donna Bees. Farming, food and agri-business specialist professional services firm IFAC has published its 7th food and agri-business report. And it finds that expanding internationally is high on the priority list for Irish agri-food small and medium enterprises. Now, among the key findings are that 64% of Irish food and agri-business small and medium enterprises are positive about the future. 81%, though, do report rising input costs. Meanwhile, 75% have set up or are setting sustainability goals. And 72% have no succession plan. Well, the report is called Getting Your Business Fit for Export. And to find out more, I've been speaking with David Layden, Head of Food and Agribusiness with IFAC. Thanks for joining us, David. Now, I see this report has been described as Ireland's only annual temperature check of food and agribusiness SMEs. So I suppose that really does put it in context.
It does. And IFAC, we set up this report back in 2018. So this is our 7th annual report. It's really a sentiment survey of what's happening in the food and agribusiness sector. So while there's plenty of reports there around all the SME world in the wider context, we're very much focused on food businesses and agribusinesses. And look at Donegal, big county for food and agribusiness and a big agricultural county, so hopefully very relevant.
Now, looking at the report, so much to go through, but, you know, in essence, it's pretty upbeat about the way forward.
It is. And as you mentioned at the top there, 64% of business leaders are optimistic, are very optimistic about the future. And that's despite all the headwinds. The 81% reporting the increase in costs, the 3 in 4 companies who find it difficult to recruit the right people, you know, all the sustainability, you know, challenges and expectations that are on companies at the moment, you know, 1 in 3 experience in short or medium term cash flow issues. So there's a lot of issues there, but they're a resilient bunch. And I suppose if you're running a business and you're leading an organization, you really do have to have that optimism streak in you. And it's good to see that 64% are optimistic about the next year.
And there's no shortage of companies that have started off maybe at a very local level, just supplying produce to within a small radius of where they actually are. And over time, they've built up, they've found customers all over Ireland. But of course, at the end of the day, it's a relatively small market. But if you start exporting, well, there's just so much potential, and we have such a good name.
That's 100% correct. And once you reach a certain scale, you really have to be looking outside the island. You know, when we look at a food product, the population of Birmingham, Manchester and Liverpool is bigger than the population of the Republic of Ireland. So when you look at it in that context, if your product market fit is right and you have a product that's suitable for, say, the GB market to begin with and then maybe further afield, there's a massive opportunity there. For our agri-engineering or our ag-tech companies, the growth in the dairy herd over the past, say, decade has been very advantageous and has been very good to them. But now that that dairy herd has plateaued, they really need to get on the plane, look at alternative markets to grow their businesses. And in fairness, all across Ireland, these companies are very important to the rural economy. So it's important that they look at export in a very serious way.
The food and agribusiness sector, it has been one of the success stories of the Irish economy. And we have been pretty strong when it comes also to innovation.
We are. And look, innovation is critical. You know, developing those new products, those new services, investing in R&D, all vitally important. I suppose one part of innovation that we're a little bit concerned about is around artificial intelligence. It's really important for any organization, but we know that only 16% of business leaders feel confident that they have a good understanding of the applicability of AI for their business. So that's something that needs to develop over the coming years. We've all become familiar with AI, or certainly a good few people have become familiar with AI through the likes of ChatGPT, but you know, AI has functioned in automation, it's functioned in robotics in a factory setting. So any of us that are going to be working for the next 10, 12, 20 years, AI is going to be a big part of life, and I suppose we'd be urging business leaders across the country in Donegal to really start looking into the applicability of AI for their business and their organisation.
We also hear a lot about sustainability. So what are the areas that the companies are really looking at? Is it things like energy and waste reduction?
It is indeed. And sustainability is on the top of everybody's tongue at the moment. It's a big deal for farmers and for the farming community, but it's also a big deal for the food and agribusiness SME community. So it was good to see 90%, 9 out of 10 companies are taking climate action. The main things they're doing is reducing energy usage, reducing waste, changing packaging. So that's all very positive. Another big positive this year was 75% of businesses have set or are in the process of setting sustainability targets. And basically that's going to give them a baseline year to measure progress against. And it's a real sign that sustainability is becoming more embedded in an organization. Now, one thing that maybe people aren't fully aware of, there's a whole raft of legislation coming from Europe, which is impacting on larger companies, but will impact on SMEs. And look, it will be an additional cost over time. But I'll just name out a few of the bits of legislation that is going to impact. The Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, CSRD, the Green Claims Directive, the European Union Deforestation Regulation, the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism. So there's a pile of legislation that's going to ultimately affect SMEs, because either their customer will be looking for sustainability information because they have to meet that legislation, or they'll be brought into the net of that legislation. So that's one to watch over the coming years, the amount of sustainability legislation that's going to impact on the SME community.
I'm speaking with David Layden, Head of Food and Agribusiness with IFAC, which has just published its Getting Your Business Fit for Export report. Interesting to note, David, that the area of succession planning, you know, it is a very key area. What was the response from people when you compiled this report?
It's a similar story for the last 7 years. It's basically around 72% of businesses do not have a clear succession plan in place. The same with the farming community, who we work very closely with. You know, a very limited number of businesses have that clear succession plan in place. If you spoke to the tax team in IFAC, they'd say to do a good tax plan that is very tax efficient, you need to give time. 5, 7, 10 years is really useful. Succession planning isn't something you can do at the last minute. So we're not probably taking it seriously enough, and more time has to be spent on succession in Irish SME organisations.
There is considerable support through grants and other means from the government, also bodies like local enterprise offices. Are businesses availing of these opportunities? Are most of them applying and actually getting grants?
They are. Like, if you have a sensible business that has the potential to export, you've more than 10 employees and you're making progress, Enterprise Ireland has the potential to be exceptionally helpful to you. If you're earlier in your journey, though, the local enterprise office has to be the first door you knock on. You have to speak to them. There's grants for different stages. There's grants for feasibility studies to see if your idea, and sometimes people's idea is their little baby and they don't really want any criticism of their little baby. But if you're deadly serious about building a commercial operation, do the feasibility study with the local enterprise office. Get a little bit external help, you know, and a little bit of objective help to see, you know, is there a market for this idea? Is it really an idea that has commercial potential? But Enterprise Ireland, exceptionally important as a business grows, and we find them very, very helpful to organisations.
Yeah. Getting exposure and looking at foreign markets, and no doubt there's been quite a few Donegal companies that really have expanded their horizons in recent years. Trade missions and trade fairs, they can certainly play a part.
They can, and the Department of Enterprise organise these, the Department of Agriculture organise them, and also there is support from the local enterprise office and Enterprise Ireland to take part in international trade fairs. And what those trade fairs can be very good at is like finding your distributor, because the distributor is key in an international jurisdiction. Who's your distributor? Have they got, you know, are they invested in your product? Do they want to sell your product? Have they the team to sell your product and the infrastructure? These international trade fairs are very good for finding good distributors, and that's a really critical step if you're going to build up a decent market in an international country.
Now, fair to say, there's a lot of optimism. A lot of firms think that they will be able to increase their turnover, particularly by exporting. But what are the really big challenges that they face? I presume one of them is actually the recruitment of staff. We hear a lot about the issues there and shortages of personnel.
Absolutely, Chris. And we're in a full employment economy. You have to work hard to attract the right talent to your team. And in particularly when you're going international, like, there's not that many girls and boys and fellas that can actually drive an international sales operation. And even when food and agribusiness SMEs find the right talent, you know, 46% of them are finding it hard to meet the salary expectations of qualified candidates when building an international team. So that is, you know, food and agribusiness, generally lower margin. It's lower margin than the likes of technology or from pharmaceutical. So meeting the salary expectations is a challenge, and that's providing you can find the right person to actually drive your international sales. So that is a big barrier for them. Other barriers include finding the right distributor, as I've mentioned earlier. That would definitely be an issue.
And if somebody wants to find out more about the Getting Your Business Fit for Export report and all the details there, how can they do that?
Chris, simply go on to ifac.ie, ifac.ie, and you can download it there and read it at your leisure.
And finally, David, just wrapping things up, IFAC is a household name throughout the country. The firm is, what, almost 50 years in business, and you pretty much touch every corner.
We do, and we have an office there in Rafoe, and a great team there, headed up by Joe Lamb in Rafoe, and Andrew Brawley is there. So we have a good old team in Rafoe and in Donegal, but we're in every county in Ireland. And again, we're very focused on the farming, food and agribusiness sector. And I think at this stage, we've something like 24,000 clients. So it's going well. We're a cooperative as well, Chris. So we're like one of those co-ops that was set up back in the 70s. And there was a lot of co-ops set up in the agricultural sector in the 70s. So very good ethos, very focused on the communities we serve. And look, at always looking for great talent to join the team as well.
And that was David Layden, Head of Food and Agribusiness with IFAC. Time now for a short commercial break. When we return, we'll be looking at the first digital readiness monitor from .ie, the National Registry for Domain Names, which analyses Ireland's progress on digital development. So join us again after this break.
If your small business has undertaken a Green for Business, Green Start or SEAI energy audit, you're eligible to apply for an energy efficiency grant aimed at reducing the impact of enterprises on the environment. The scheme from Local Enterprise Office Donegal supports all aspects of sustainability, including water, energy and the circular economy. Continue your sustainability journey at localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Welcome back. .ie, the national registry for over 330,000 domain names, has launched its first digital readiness monitor, which analyses Ireland's progress on digital development. Essentially, it examines the level of digital sophistication of websites in Ireland, be they .ie domains or .com or indeed others. One of the key findings is that 36% of websites in Ireland have a low or very low level of sophistication despite various government grants and programs to support digital advancement. Well, to delve a little further into the subject, I've been speaking with David Curtin, CEO of the National Registry.ie, and I began by putting it to him that there is plenty of room for improvement as far as the majority of Irish websites are concerned.
Yes, Chris, there certainly is. And if you think about the reason why we did this digital readiness monitor, it was really to analyse Ireland's progress on digital development. And in order to do that, we looked at 11 scores, and we call that, the outcome of that, we call that the web technology intensity score. So the 11 scores within that. And you're right when you say there's room for improvement, absolutely. 36% had a low or very low score, and it's going in the wrong direction. We looked at 2021 and 2022, and that figure has actually disimproved. So we're really looking forward to 2023's figures now to see hopefully a rebound in that number, because really that's where the core of Ireland's businesses are really concerned with.
So this decline in the numbers that you'd like to see, is it a case of maybe some businesses in the rush to get a website up and running and developed maybe aren't putting enough thought into things?
Well, if we cast our mind back to what was 2021, 2022, so if you recall, there were the lockdowns and there was a huge digital acceleration during that time frame. So you're right, you could have had quite a few people coming online for the first time, and maybe they just didn't get a chance to develop that website the way they thought they might have. So we'll see with 2023 whether there's an improvement or not. But initially, I suppose the good news in the numbers is that the total number of websites we looked at, they actually went up by 30,000 between 2021 and 2022. So that confirms your suggestion there that, yes, people were going online in their droves during that COVID lockdown timeframe. So that's the good news. But the less good news then is that they still have a lot of work to do to get to achieve their aspirations, I suppose, for what they can do online.
Now, it is worth pointing out that there is quite a lot of support out there. I know here in Donegal, through the local enterprise office, there's a trading online voucher, and a lot of companies have availed of these supports. But that said, there may be a lot of people who are unaware that there are supports there that can help you develop your digital presence.
That's true. And as part of releasing this report, you know, we're calling on government to release some funds to help small business to upskill. There's something like 2 billion of a surplus in the National Training Fund, and really we should be tapping into that to help small business owners to upskill themselves, but probably more importantly to upskill their staff, because let's face it, they're the people who will be running, you know, or keeping the website up and running, adding the plugins, you know, doing the social media posts and managing customers, you know, through the new digital tools at their disposal. So I think upskilling is probably the most important recommendation we could make to the Minister for Finance and probably the Minister for Enterprise as well, as they're framing the budget this year.
Now, in the Digital Readiness Monitor, have you discovered anything that was a real surprise?
Yes, of the 11 monitors, the one that always surprises me is the websites with evidence of selling online. Like, believe it or not, only 30% of all websites that we looked at have that ability to sell online. And we looked at 250,000 websites. So that's a lot that are not really, I call it leveraging the power of their biggest digital asset, the one they have most control over compared to social media, let's say. So they're not leveraging that to generate sales. And I think that's a missed opportunity, because the website can be a 24/7 salesperson. And really the potential is there. So we'd love to see skills improving in that area and people really sweating that asset that can do so much while the business owner is sleeping. Their website can be selling abroad.
And what about the integration between websites and social media? Just, you know, how many people are really optimizing the potential there?
So in our results, it's about 50%. And that's good, and we love to see that, because that shows that whoever owns those websites, that they're motivated to be more sophisticated, you know, to have that improve access and reach to markets. Now, some of them are looking for cost reduction and for process optimization as well. But when you have integrated your social media with your website, you're getting the best of both worlds, because social media, you can get in touch with your customers for special offers. And then with the website, you're bringing them to a trusted place for e-commerce.
1 in 4 websites, or just over 27%, have a high or very high level of sophistication. So how do you actually measure that? What gets you into that bracket?
So what's really important there is good security. So if you see websites with a CAPTCHA, in other words, the one that says, I am not a robot, that's showing you that the business owner cares about security. If they have an SSL cert, that's another sign that they're interested in protecting their customers. And in fact, Google recognizes that, because it favors secure websites and they get greater visibility on SEO. So good security, you're protecting your customers and you're showing them that you can be trusted as a business owner. So we really like to see that. There are other things as well. I mean, having a good CRM or having good CDN, which is a content delivery network, and having those verified, again, they're good indicators of a business owner that's really taking care of their customers.
So if somebody's listening in and maybe they're wondering about their own website, is there any sort of kind of handy checklist that one can go through to tick the boxes and know you're going in the right direction?
Yes, well, this report is on our website, and we'd strongly encourage people to read, to have a look at the report. They can see what the 11 indicators are there, and we tell them, you know, what's within each of the 11. So they can look at that and say, do you know something, that would be easy for me to do? I can get onto my web developer, and yes, I'll put in the CAPTCHA. I'll make sure that the SSL cert is the latest. I'll make sure that WordPress is bang up to date. So yes, there are tips and recommendations there within the report on our website.
Now, we're in a global village, and if you have a website, Your customers could be from anywhere around the world. What about foreign language and foreign currencies? And, you know, I take it there's a lot of businesses out there who may only have a website in English, and in that sense they could be missing out on a lot of potential business from numerous other outlets.
That's true, and that's something we looked for. And again, it's one of those areas of surprise. Websites with some indication of international activity, they're down around 10-11%. So that tells you, and actually what we're looking for is some evidence of maybe foreign language support or maybe some reference to foreign currencies, for instance. They're all indicators that somebody is interested in customers abroad. So that is low. And when you consider that our biggest trading partner in the UK is now outside of the EU after Brexit, we know that small businesses, and they say they want to develop markets now outside of the UK. So yeah, it's not good that indicator is so low. And it will be interesting as we put Brexit further and further behind us, you know, to look at that indicator in the years to come and see, you know, is that improving?
And what about the whole area of online advertising and using the right tools there on your website?
Yeah, that's another indicator. And you'd expect, you know, somebody who has a website for many years to be pretty hot on analytics, but also on online advertising. And sure enough, you see that around 2/3 are showing signs of sophisticated online advertising. So what you're looking for there really is are you seeing kind of evidence of, in the metadata, are you seeing something about programmatic ad buying maybe, or some reference to artificial intelligence maybe for optimizing an ad campaign? And the scanners that our researchers in DCU are using, they can pick up all of that from the metadata on the website. Mm-hmm. So they're the kind of indicators that you're looking for. That's somebody who's really sweating their website if you see that there are all these signs of being sophisticated with their online advertising.
Do we know, or is it possible to compare websites here with our counterparts in other places in Europe? I mean, are we doing, do you think, better or worse than other countries in the European Union?
So we don't know the answer to that, but our research partners in DCU, they are, like us, determined to find out how we're doing across Europe. There is one thing we know, and that is that the official DESI statistics, that's DESI, they're used by the EU. So those stats, they're masking really some structural problems, deficits you might call them, with capabilities and readiness. So what I mean by that is, in economics, you often hear them talking about GDP and GNI. One economist unkindly referred to it as leprechaun economics. But the same thing applies to the DESI score. Like, the DESI score excludes SMEs with less than 10 employees. So it's ignoring most of the small businesses across Ireland. So our recommendation to government is to use stats like ours that go beneath the DESI hood, if you like, and look at all of those SMEs with less than 10 employees. And that's what the stats will show. And it will point them in a different direction then to what programs they develop to help and support small business. I know people know about the website, the Trading Online Voucher Scheme, but there are other programs that can be used to help the business owner when you use the data that includes less than 10 employees.
Is there, you know, any direct difference between rural and urban-based companies and the websites that they have?
Yes, there is. Unfortunately, there are signs that that there's still that digital divide between location and age, probably, and even in some sectors. We have a separate report, the Domain Profile Report, and that looks at the number of domains per head of population in a county. Now, the good news is that divide has been closing since 2020, 2021, because we see a bigger growth in domain name registrations when we look at counties like Galway, Mayo, Sligo, and not so in Donegal, I'm afraid, but there is a sign that the digital divide is closing in some counties.
And finally, David, if people want to find out more about this digital readiness monitor, where should they go?
If they go to our website, which is weare.ie, they'll find the digital readiness monitor there.
And that was .ie CEO David Curtin. Well, that's it for another edition of Business Matters here on Highland Radio. If you want to contact me, you can do so by email to businessmatters@highlandradio.com. Thanks for listening in. Until the next time, from me, Chris Ashmore, goodbye.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by local enterprise office Donegal. Find out more about the Energy Efficiency Grant, aimed at helping businesses to operate in a more sustainable way, by visiting localenterprise.ie/Donegal.